Well, at the moment, yes, 100%. Like what you just said there has like resonated with a lot of people. A lot of people didn't even know what Just Stop Oil was. And from my experience, like I have been in Just Stop Oil for months, and like I have done so much actions that have involved stopping the flow of oil, you know, targeting oil infrastructure, really direct action that has an immediate effect. But unfortunately, that was not getting us the press that we needed to put out the message that we need to seriously halt all new oil and gas projects in the UK. And this is the best way to get out the message. I've done everything. And this seems to be the only thing that is getting the press. We're on Twitter every day. We are on every news like piece. You can see us. Everybody knows about us, which is insane that we had to throw soup at a painting for that to happen. But unfortunately, that's just the way that the media works. And we have to go with that.
You've been arrested 8 times. You've blocked roads on several occasions. You've chained yourself to oil tankers. You've been arrested along with colleagues. And the point you're making is, and it does seem somewhat ironic, that 8 arrests and countless actions can all be completely ignored. One can of tomato soup has catapulted you into the public consciousness right across Europe.
Yeah, I completely get that. It was a bit like I've put my civil liberty at risk so many times on actions that I've thought are so amazing, like, you know, smashing up forecourts, or as you said, I've climbed on top of oil tankers that has stopped the oil flow going into the UK for weeks on end. I did it with about 400 people. And those are the kind of actions that people keep talking about that we should be doing. And people don't realize that we have been doing that. And we've been doing more than just roadblocks and more than just throwing food at like paintings. But unfortunately, this is the only way to get the message out to people all across the world.
What is the core message of Just Stop Oil? Because, I mean, the phrase itself, the argument is the phrase itself is self-explanatory, but cards on the table. You know the geography of Donegal as well as anyone. I drove to work today in a car. It's a hybrid, but it's still powered by petrol. I have an oil-fired boiler in my home that made sure I was in some way warm when I woke up this morning. I'm thinking I have so much in my house and so much in my home and in my life that is intrinsically linked with oil and its byproducts. If it's just stopped, I mean, you know, I'm going back 150 years in terms of my quality of life.
That's so fair. And the people don't realize what our demands actually are. So first of all, as you said, it's quite clear we want to stop licensing for all new oil and gas in the UK. So what you say there is, if, you know, if we went off it straight away, it would be chaos. It obviously would be. We can't just stop oil. But the thing is, we have enough oil to do us 8 years. We can wean off oil so easily, and we can make a just transition for everybody. And not only that, Liz Truss, when she was in power, she recently gave way to 100 new fossil fuel licensing and lifted the mandate in fracking. We're not asking for a huge amount, but you have to see the issue here when the leader stood up at COP26 and said how the UK were going to be the leaders of the climate movement, and then reforce fracking and license 100 new fossil fuel projects compared to the 30 that Just Stop Oil were originally fighting. And as I said, we have 8 years left of oil, and with that oil, we are in such a privileged place right now that the government could so easily implement ways for a just transition where workers would, you know, be able to go off at no bother. But right now, this is just driving us like bigger into the crisis that we're seeing, and it's just going to get worse.
That's okay, let's talk about the practicality of that, because, okay, 8 years. Now, I work just over 2 miles from home. I have colleagues here that are working 20 miles from home. As I said before, you're from Donegal. You know the geography of Donegal. You know what the public transport, or better phrased, the lack of it, is in Donegal at this point in time. We're wedded to our cars, not because we have a fetish about cars, not because we love our cars, but because we have no choice but to use cars to get around. I mean, within 8 years, how are we going to power those cars? And if the answer is electric, I mean, how is the electricity going to be generated? How is that network going to be organised? And is it your belief that realistically a new pattern of energy can actually be introduced over the course of 8 years that maintains the level of connectivity that we have at the moment and maintains industry, maintains employment, maintains the economy?
Yes, 100%. Like, the kind of thing that I like to use to explain why I think that it actually would be quite easy for us to do that is like COVID, for example. Literally in the matter of days, we changed the way that we live because we saw an immediate threat of an unseen virus. And right now, I don't think people are actually understanding the threat we're facing. I read an article from the Derry Journal saying that Donegal and Derry will be underwater by 2040. Like, I don't think you understand. My family is in Donegal and they will not have a place to live. We are looking at 50% of potato crops gone this year and one third of wheat crops gone in Donegal. It's so hard for me to kind of express why we should wean off oil when it's so clear in my head that if we want a livable future, unfortunately, we're going to have to make some sacrifices. And the government have the money. They have the ways. We have better energy storage. They do have the ways. We have the technology and we can definitely develop ways to use oil differently or just completely wean off it to have a livable future.
The difference between using COVID as an example, though, and the situation we're in at the moment is that when the initial COVID restrictions came into place, they were there initially for 4 weeks, then they were there for 2 months, that there was a feeling with COVID, okay, we'd all stay in our homes, we won't go out, we won't socialise, we won't meet people, but there was always that knowledge in the back of our heads that this is temporary, this is a blip, this is something we just have to do until this virus is taken care of, or until we have a vaccine, and then we can get back to normal. The difference between the COVID situation and this is you're saying there is no getting back to normal when it comes to oil and gas and fossil fuels. We're talking about constructing a new normal and constructing that new normal from scratch.
But that has to be done. That literally, we just have to make that. We don't have the privilege right now to talk about whether we prefer to stay on oil or prefer, like, we are talking about millions of climate refugees. One third of Pakistan is underwater right now. Okay. If one third of Ireland was underwater right now, we would be on the streets and you would be pissed off as much as I am. I find it so hard to kind of talk about the things that we enjoy so much from oil because they are such privilege that we've had and it will be really hard to wean off them. But we can't really speak about that when people are dying every day due to the effects of climate change. You just can't compare them. We have such a luxury right now and we do have the money. As I said, we have the technology, we have the money, we have so much right now that could bring us into a better future without oil and gas.
So what heats our homes? What heats our homes?
Better insulation. You saw with Insulate Britain. Insulate Britain was a massive movement in the UK and that brought the word insulation into the UK. We have better insulation. We have so many better energy efficiency, better energy storage. There are ways to do it. And as I said, this isn't up to the people. Like, the government are there, okay, to implement these things and to make it cheaper and better for us. Insulating homes would be cheaper for us anyways. I'm in London right now and I can't even afford to heat my home. You know what I mean? It's absolutely insane.
The problem can be, and I don't want to harp on about this, but the problem can be, if you're talking about insulation, are you speaking about insulating with fiberglass insulating? I mean, can you do that naturally? Because if you're insulating with the sort of foam that would have been made, in many cases, those foams are either the byproducts of oil or they're made in an industrial process that at its root uses oil. There's an argument, for instance, when it comes to electric cars, that the lithium batteries and the extraction process for mining lithium in Africa is a problematic issue on its own. So you can't just talk about we'll use electric cars when you have a situation where the actual process of mining the lithium to power the batteries is creating difficulty for people. And if you go from having a small minority of cars electric to all cars electric, then the level of lithium mining it's going to take to actually allow that to happen is going to be huge. So you might be trading off one environmental catastrophe, but in the process of doing so, introducing another. That it's not just a matter of stop oil, it's a matter of look at every process within an integrated economy. And as I said, we pretty much are starting from scratch because the whole industrial process, not just the driving of a car or the heating of a home, but the actual manufacture of everything we use on a daily basis is going to have to be reviewed and changed because so much of that is dependent on oil, gas and their byproducts.
And that is such a fair point, but that's why these climate conferences make me so angry. We've had 26 COPs. We've had the Paris Agreement. We've had countless conferences for years. So the fact that we're talking about this now so late, we've had the spaces to make these kind of changes. It's the politicians in charge that aren't thinking about ways that we could actually change the way that we use oil and gas, like you're talking about. Okay, we've had all these climate conferences that are supposed to be political leaders, citizens getting together to talk about ways that we can live differently. And unfortunately, these places aren't getting used to talk about those things. There's been 26 COPs. There shouldn't have to be 26 of them. There's 26 of them, and still we're talking about that pretty much everything that we use has oil. And unfortunately, it's right. So as you were saying, we're going to have to pretty much much start from the beginning, but we have to start at some point, because if we don't start now, what we're going to see in 5 years is going to be catastrophic. And we're going to wish that we had like done something before, where we had the time and where we had the money.
What impact are you having on politicians? You're making waves, as you say, you're getting on the media, you're getting your voices heard. Part of the problem with that, and let's be honest and put the cards on the table, the reaction to it is going to a mixture of young people at it again, right over to people who are going to be quite against you as a group, because they're going to see you as disruptive. For instance, there's a comment has come in, and you know, the comment says, the likes of that young girl on your programme, blocking fuel, blocking harvest, blocking fuel production and increasing cost. This is happening in this country. Thanks, dear. You know, and the message being, you know, that, you know, they don't see you as the solution. There are people out there who are going to see you as the problem. What impact are you having on politics at the moment in terms of getting people who can make a change in political circles and who can get into the point where we're working towards the transition you believe is necessary and inevitable?
Yeah, so before I joined Just Stop Oil, I worked a lot with politicians, writing them letters, you know, meeting with MPs, all that kind of things. We had a meeting and it did pretty much nothing. They shook your hand and they pretended like they care. With Just Stop Oil, we're using tactics that we have seen have worked with the likes of other civil resistance groups, like the suffragettes and the civil rights movement. We're not here to be liked. We're here to cause disruption, to raise the alarm. When Martin Luther King like said the I Had a Dream speech, one of the most famous speeches of like pretty much all time, that he was at a 70% disapproval rate. Unfortunately, we don't have time to get everybody on our side. I am not brave. I'm not like trying to annoy anybody, but I'm so desperate that when I look at history, this is shown to work. I have tried everything else. I've marched peacefully. I've written, as I said, to my politicians. I've met with politicians. I went to climate conferences. I went to COP. I did what I thought, you know, could be right. And this is the only thing that has worked. We see with Ireland that declared a climate emergency not long after the Extinction Rebellion protests, and the same in London. Civil disobedience and civil resistance works, because the government will not listen to you unless you give them no choice.
As you said, climate emergencies have been declared. What worth has that been? I mean, what difference has that made?
Empty words, as always, empty promises that did nothing. We thought, you know, this might actually be a start, because I think Ireland were like the second country to declare a climate emergency. We were quite ahead with that. And it didn't do much. They said it so that we'd kind of shut up for a bit. But unfortunately, that didn't work.
Yesterday, activists scaled the walls of Downing Street, and Just Stop Oil then issued a statement, and it says basically Just Stop Oil is going to pause its disruption. Mm-hmm. From today, Just Stop Oil will pause its campaign of civil resistance. We're giving time to those in the government who are in touch with reality to consider their responsibilities to this country at this time. If, as we sadly expect, we receive no response from ministers to our demand by the end of Friday, 4th of November, we will escalate our legal disruption against this treasonous government. Our action will be proportionate to the task of stopping the crime against humanity, which is new oil and gas. What can we expect to happen next week, assuming that Rishi Sunak does not call you into Downing Street and say he's acceding to your demands, which, let's face it, ain't going to happen.
Yeah, you're completely right. Yeah, I was in that video, and I'm not going to like speak on what we're going to do or what like not going to do for obvious legal reasons, but we're going to continue with our legal disruption. And unfortunately, it is going to be more extreme and more disruptive, because we have tried everything. And right now, the only thing that is getting the attention of media and some politicians and journalists, we are gaining more and more support every day. And this seems to be working. So if we don't get a reply, and if Rishi Sunak doesn't want to even just sit down with us, talk to us, even though I know that will probably be useless, and then we will have to continue with civil resistance, because we aren't going to stop. This isn't just kind of a thing we'll do until we kind of, you know, run out of energy. This is the fight. We cannot afford to lose. We literally cannot afford to lose, because if we do, everything I love and everything I've ever loved will be gone. And I'm sorry, I just can't accept that. And if that means that I'm annoying people, you know, in the roads, and I completely understand that. But in my eyes, that disruption is completely necessary to sound the alarm.
Yeah, but this one of the ironies of protest like that, if, you know, as you've suggested there, we'll see more blocking of roads. Here's the reality. The blocking of a road discommodes and upsets the person trying to get to work, the person yeah. trying to get home from work, the person on their way to their daughter's birthday party, the person rushing to the shop to get the milk for the tea and then trying to get home. They're the they're the people that that discommodes. Who it doesn't discommode is going to be Rishi Sunak, who is in Downing Street. It doesn't necessarily discommode the environment ministers. It doesn't necessarily discommode the finance ministers. So the problem with protests like that very often can be that the people it hurts are not the people it's directed against.
Yeah.
And what that's going to do is, rather than increase public acceptance and public support for your stance, it's actually going to double down on opposition, because people think, who are these feckers stopping me from going to work? And that's always the problem. That's always the risk when you embark on a protest like that.
Yeah, and that's, like, I completely agree. But we have spread the Home Office. You know, as I said, we've targeted the places where these MPs and ministers and everything is, and that changes nothing compared to when we have done roadblocks. We have gotten more response than any. You know what I mean? We are on the media so much that they 100% see us. For example, with when we blocked off the oil, the distribution of oil, it got so bad that it was almost classed as a national emergency, which means that that form, that piece of paper, has to go into 10 Downing Street and someone has to read that. So depending on the disruption that we make, it actually will get to them. But also the people that we're causing the disruption of, it hurts me so much, because it is the normal Joe, as you're saying. You know what I mean? It's my family. It's everybody else's family. But these people are the people that are going to be hit most by the climate crisis. Do you think that the government are going to care when this all goes down and people can't afford to eat, people can't afford to heat their homes, people can't afford to do anything? The government will not give them a just transition to live. They will just be left with nothing.
I just want to share some of the comments that have been coming in. One caller says, is that girl saying she's a vandal? Another caller says, well done to that girl. We need more people to face and stand up to the coming crisis that we're all facing. She makes a lot of good points about oil. The rest of us are just sitting at home giving out about it. At least she's taking action. Fair play. On the other hand, caller says, why are you giving them airtime? We've been told this last 50 years that we will die from climate change. This is just another scam to tax people from their hard-earned money. Another caller says, why are all these climate activists from privileged middle-class backgrounds who is funding them?
I'm from Remelton.
Well, I mean, in fairness, I suppose.
I've seen Remelton.
There are people in Remelton who are from middle-class backgrounds as well. Amy Rose,
it's not me.
Yeah, Amy Rose, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you.
You've been arrested 8 times. Would it be fair to assume that arrest number 9 mightn't be too far away?
I don't think it'll be too far at all.
Yeah.
I think keep an eye on your screens and you might see me pretty soon.
Yeah. Amy Rose, thanks indeed for speaking to us. I mean, you know, it's interesting what you're involved in, and, you know, there's going to be a myriad of reactions to it, and there's going to be gut reactions, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. But in the meantime, Amy Rose, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us, and we'll be keeping a very close eye to see what's happening in the future.
Thanks for listening. Thank you.
Amy Rose, thank you. It's been our pleasure. That's Amy Rose O'Donnell there.